Hey there, it's Dr. Heidi. You're listening to It's Not Normal, It's Toxic, a podcast geared towards the things you may be misunderstanding about the difficult relationships in your life. I did not understand it when I was in it, but I definitely understand it now, and I want to share that understanding with you so that you too can find the courage you didn't know you had to make the changes you didn't think you could make. So here we are back at It's Not Normal, It's Toxic. I'm so glad that you're here. I know it seems silly that I'm like, I'm so glad that you're here to listen about toxic relationships and how to get out from away from people that are no fun to talk about and no fun to have in your life. But obviously this is my mission. I love doing it and I love being able to hear from listeners and be able to lead and guide people in a direction that I did not go because I was the one that did every single thing wrong. So I could help all of you do it a little bit more right. Today we have a guest. I kind of feel like I know her a little bit. She's been in my support group for quite a long time. So I've seen her name pop up 1,000 times on notifications on Facebook. And so I've been really excited to have her as a guest. And the other reason I'm really anticipating this be a good interview is she has an aspect of abuse that a lot of us see maybe pop up in intervals throughout a toxic relationship. It may move in when they need a little extra dose of power or a little extra dose of control. But the way she experienced this particular type of abuse is above and beyond what most of us would have experienced. And what I'm talking about is I'm talking about spiritual abuse. And we have Charlotte with us today. Welcome. I'm so glad you made time to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I had the honor of being on her podcast, which we will talk about in a little bit so that anybody who wants more information on this lovely lady can hop over to her podcast and listen as well. So I grew up in a Christian community, very close knit. I'm not going to say that looking back, there wasn't any type of manipulation because I'm certain that there was, you know, the church is always broke. But I have still a very healthy feeling about the community and the foundation of the religion that I grew up in. So I'm just going to kind of let you tell your story. And because we want to hear from you, because there is a listener out there right now that is going to connect with you immediately. So I know you have a lot to share. So just, you know, give us a background and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, thanks. I grew up in a Christian community, actually several churches as we moved around, that were very fundamentalist, meaning they were very controlling, very rigid in their beliefs. They didn't like it if anyone doubted or criticized or had other opinions. So there's a lot of Christian denominations out there. Obviously, there's churches of all kinds out there. And a lot of the specific ones that you might go to in their own framework, they're very fundamentalist. And so the ones that I went to, the way that that played out was if you didn't toe the line and do exactly the type of Christian living that they dictated, for example, with what kind of movies and music, you know, even fun stuff like that in your life, there were very clear guidelines, you know? So like I couldn't watch a movie that showed unmarried people in bed together, which a lot of very tame PG or G rated movies, they actually kind of show that. Or, I mean, and I would go to different churches with different ones. Yeah. I couldn't have anything that had fantasy or magic or anything like that. So when I was a little kid born in 1981, I was growing up in the 80s, going to public school when I was really little, I was not allowed to watch Smurfs, Care Bears, I don't know, a ton of other things, a lot of Disney movies.
Every cartoon in the 80s?
Because yeah.
Because they all had magic or spells or...
Yeah, they all did. Rainbow Bright, all of it. And they dictated, you know, like only listening to Christian music and... but then also things like, so as a kid, not an adult who had had a lot of life experience and then came into it, but as a kid, I had to pray all the time for people's salvation. And church was really dead set on us knowing that hellfire is real. And that if, even if you're a Christian, you probably won't get into heaven because most Christians are backslidden and God is mad at you and you're always messing up. And so I was constantly trying to live well enough and to not sin. And things like that, I don't know what people think if they haven't been in it, but if you are a little kid that is always told that and going through things like exorcisms and deliverance, if you do a normal kid thing, like you might lie to your parent and say, oh, I did my chore, you know, and you didn't because you're five and you just wanted to go outside and play, you could get a serious punishment. And it was also in that culture very common to have severe corporal punishment that was seen as normal and even godly. So anyway, there's a lot more to it, but it was just as a kid and then growing up, it was a lot of shame, a lot of self-hatred was actually condoned and praised because you're supposed to see yourself as a worthless wretch that is always bad.
So you draw the line, right?
Yeah, you have to live up to these high standards of behavior. You have to always be perfect. And so a lot of psychological ramifications as an adult because of that.
So just in case we have the listener out there that is in something like this, but maybe doesn't know a lot of the definitions, can you, and you might not know the definition, but maybe you can explain it. When you say fundamentalist, can you explain a little bit what that looks like?
So some people have a religious belief, Christian or otherwise, where they think these are the things that guide me in my life. So if I have a decision or if I'm going to do something, I have these beliefs and these values that I'm going to take those as like the mainstays to guide me. And that's not like a detrimental thing, but a fundamentalist view or, you know, religion is, at least as far as I know, when I'm saying it, it's you take those things and it is rigid and it is no matter if it hurts someone, no matter if it is unkind, if it is harsh, if it has bad effects, even that you see in your life or someone else's, you say, no, this is the way, no matter how much it hurts.
So it's very black and white with no gray area at all.
Yeah, like no mercy, no grace, which is ironic that so many Christian churches are like that because now I've had like 3 years or so outside of that framework. And I read religious texts in a whole different way where it's like, no, it's all about grace. It's all about mercy. It's all about being kind and loving everyone, right? Like that's the whole meaning of most religions is to not only for yourself to love and be loved, but to like bring good things into the world. And it's just ridiculous to me that so much of religion in the fundamentalist framework is the complete opposite.
I do, you know, I grew up in that environment and was in church twice a Sunday. And I went to the Christian school and I, like I said, I really felt like my community was healthy. I use a lot of the beliefs. I never experienced anything like you just described. but, you know, me going through the toxic marriage that I had, there was a lot of the times that I felt like I questioned if it was even real. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I'm a good person. So if I haven't hurt anybody and haven't intentionally done wrong, then why am I being punished by being in this type of relationship? And of course, now looking back, I am pretty sure if I wouldn't have been taken care of, I probably wouldn't be here today to be talking about it because I think things would have gone a lot different if I, you know, if there wasn't a higher power protecting me. But what I have learned too, and it's made me, I bet you're thinking a little bit from the same point of view, correct me if I'm wrong. To me, it's really about my personal relationship. It's not about, and I'm not saying anything bad about churches and religions and established, you know, type doctrination type stuff, but on my personal level, it's about my relationship. Mm-hmm. But when you do think about the things that you were taught, I mean, you can't really do anything sometimes but shake your head because you're like, what? And then why did we believe that? Oh, because Dad believed it. Oh, and because grandma believed it. Oh, and because it's just like the person that gets the Easter ham out and they hack both the ends off. And the daughter goes, why do you cut both the ends of the ham off? And her mom goes, oh, because grandma always did it. So she goes to grandma and says, why did you cut both the ends of the Easter ham off? And she goes, oh, because my mom always did it. And so great grandma is still alive. And she goes to great grandma and says, why do you cut both ends of the Easter ham off? And she goes, I never had a pan big enough to fit the ham. And like, that's what we do. We don't question it. It's just because they did it and this is how it is. And so, you know, I did a lot of reflecting. Now, where you are today is so far away from where you were even 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit. We understand that how, you know, your upbringing, how did that religion carry on to impact different parts of your life as you became older?
Yeah, it definitely instilled in me a lot of compassion and a desire to help people, which when I was a kid and a teenager and going to Bible college, that looked like making them conform to these things that were supposed to save them. But I look back, even when I was in public school until fourth grade, basically, I would, in first grade especially, I would have these little, I don't know, like evangelism times at the playground, because at Sunday school, we had to tell how many people we saved that week. And
you'd have little meetings.
Yeah. So I would gather kids around and start telling them how to be saved. I never had any like parents or teachers or anyone say anything, which now I think is funny. But every now and then a kid would actually pray the sinner's mm-hmm. prayer with me, and I would get so delighted. I knew the angels were excited, and I would say, oh, there's a party in heaven right now. They're having a party. And I would picture it with like the little pointy birthday hats and blowers and all that in heaven with all the angels. So I would do things like that. And then when I got a little older, I just felt too awkward to do that. And I started being homeschooled. So I didn't have public school platforms for my evangelism, but I would.
I'm sorry, that's so cute.
I loved reading. And so at the library, I got so many books every week. I devoured every book. And so I would put these little notes where I would draw hearts and rainbows. And then I would put the instructions on how to pray and have Jesus save you. And I would slip it into like Stuart Little or, you know, the Ramona books or the Babysitter's Club, whatever I was reading, because I thought, oh, this is perfect. I wonder if anyone else has done this. And then I would, you know, just put it somewhere in the middle and hope that the librarian never took it out. And I don't know, like I would do things like that. So anyway, now, like as I've grown up, I don't do those things, obviously, but even as my beliefs changed, I've always had that desire to reach out to people and to help them. And if someone's going through a hard time, I love being the one to comfort and, you know, sit with them in it and carry their pain, all of that. I spent most of my adult life doing ministry work. I led a lot of ministries at my old church before I left. And I don't look back on that with any kind of bad taste in my mouth. Like the actual ministry work, I would go to the hospital and I would sit with people while someone was unconscious. I would go, you know, bring a meal when someone had surgery and sit there and pray or vacuum their house. Like I love that. That makes me come alive. And I loved mobilizing other people to do those kind of things, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I mentioned at the beginning that you've been a member of my Strength Within group for a long time. We do have members of Strength Within that are there because the toxic entity in their life is a religious entity. But can you expand on, was there specific toxic people in your life that maybe you missed the signs of you ended up because of some of this upbringing and how you had to kind of conform to that? Who were the toxic people in your life?
So a lot of it was people who, because they had a certain title in the church world, they were infallible, you know, like whether it was a ministry leader or a pastor, or even just someone who was really accepted and had a lot of power to say what they wanted at church, those people, it was almost like they're untouchable if they do anything wrong. And that's one way that religion and churches specifically can empower abuse and oppression, because a lot of those people, they would do things that were either unkind or even abusive. Mm-hmm. And if anyone tried to even mildly question, right, like not stand up and point a finger and blow alarms, but just be like, oh, is that okay? Or was that right? People, not only would the offender get all up, you know, in an uproar and be able to use Bible ideas or Bible verses about like, touch not the Lord's anointed one. Or they could say, this was a holy thing to do. Look at how God in the Bible would kill the entire city and all the men, women, and children of the people that didn't believe the right way. So they could have all these ways to justify bad things they did that really hurt people, or they could blame the victims. So in my world, it was that women are always tricking men, just like Eve in the garden. She tricked Adam. And if she hadn't done that, there would be no sin, no sickness, nothing bad. We would still be living in a beautiful place where everyone's happy all the time. But women ruined it. And so if a woman had any kind of complaint, anything from like a sexual predator in the church down to, I don't know, just something unfair, women were not believed. It was just, well, you only feel that way because women are rebellious. Women are oversensitive. They're over emotional. You can't trust this, you know? Right. And then they can do all sorts of prayers and exorcisms on you to kind of keep you in line, you know?
So women are sensitive and they are emotional. And if they can do an exorcism to get rid of a little of that with me at some point,
oh my God. They don't work. Yeah, the exorcisms just make it worse, in my opinion.
I can't imagine. I mean, it's kind of making, we're laughing, but it's kind of making people get a little bit teary-eyed to think of some of the stuff that you or people that you were close to you went through. If there is a listener that is relating to this, what does it feel like when you start questioning or doubting this big religious system that you've been told your whole life is, you know, the real deal? How does it feel when you start doubting? I mean, it's probably scary.
Yeah, it's very, very scary, but it's mostly disorienting. So I experienced this. And then soon after coming out of that church, I actually was interviewed under a pseudonym for a book called Uncertain. And in that book, they interviewed a lot of us that came out of this specific kind of Christian abusive culture. And all the stories are the same. It's just very disorienting when you start to put the pieces together. Not only are you seeing whatever bad stuff is going on right then, but it starts to relabel everything in your past. Mm-hmm. And it's this wild thing where you're driving down the road or you're doing something, you're not even thinking about church or relationships. And all of a sudden your mind will just pop out a memory of something that seemed normal at the time, or something that you thought you were doing the wrong thing. And it's like in that recovery phase, which can be years, it'll pop out a thing and you'll say, oh my gosh, I was normal for crying or being afraid when this thing happened. My kid was in the hospital. God wasn't mad at me for crying and feeling afraid because my kid was in the ICU. You know, that was one of mine. And like, oh, I was reprimanded. I was yelled at. I was physically pushed around and told that I had to be joyful. And if I wasn't joyful in that situation, then I was asking for Satan to kill my kid. And so things like
very
that.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Very definitely scary, harsh.
Very like you can't be a human being in a fundamentalist, toxic religious place, because human beings, we have all these great ways that our bodies and our minds help us get through things, like grieving, lament, appropriate anger, you know, all these emotions that we're supposed to feel and we're supposed to express. And then that's how we move through and we don't get stuck in, like, you know, bitterness or psychological harm or whatever. And so one of the things when you start coming out of it and you make these realizations is that you start to question everything. So for me, and I've heard others say similar things, it's like you go to make a decision, maybe your dishwasher breaks or something basic in life, and you think, oh my gosh, I don't think I have to go pray. You know, and like in my old world, you had to pray, you had to get revelations from God, you had to know exactly what brand or where to buy it, because everything hinges on this, and Satan will attack you or you'll go to hell forever if you disobey God about a decision. And so you would think it would be like incredibly freeing right away to be like, oh, the heck with all these rules, I'm going to go do everything normal and not care about it. But it was so crippling. The fear was
because you probably unbelievable. You're probably scared to do anything because, okay, yeah, this one might not be true, but what if it is?
Yeah, you don't know what's true or not. It's like the way I said it to someone once a couple years ago was, it's like everyone knows that you should not let your little kid go run out into traffic at like a busy road with a lot of lanes where the cars are always going. Nobody tells their kid, you know, a little 1 or 2 year old, you don't say, here, go play here. But it felt to me when I was coming out of all this, every single thing that I was now starting to do or have my kids do, it felt like I was doing that because it was so ingrained in me. Like
you're just exposing everything all at once.
Yeah. Everything is a risk. Everything is like a life or death. Like you're supposed to pray for what clothes to wear because there were all these stories about like, if you wear a certain color of clothing or a certain thing, then you might be at the store and someone had prayed that they're going to kill themselves, but please God, send someone along who's wearing this. And then they'll come up and be like, oh my gosh, I prayed this. And now I know I should live.
If you didn't pray that day, you'd have the wrong color on.
Yeah. And so they would like shame us about like everything you do, every way, you know, if you're driving somewhere, there might be 2 or 3 routes to take. One might be super long, but you have to check what way, God, because God might be either trying to save you from an accident or he might be trying to put you where someone needs to see you. Someone might need to see a red car of your type drive by to be an answer or a sign. So it was just this high level of control. And when I started coming out of that, I mean, it took a good couple of years to really not panic over basic things all day long. Because yeah, every time it felt like I'm just sending my little baby out into traffic and everyone's like, oh, nobody cares. Cars don't hit babies. You know, that's how it felt in my body when people were like, you can wear what you want.
Yeah, that would seem very paralyzing to me. Yeah, but what if I go to the grocery store and I don't have the right color on and then somebody hurts themselves?
Yeah. And then you go to hell forever and burn an eternal conscience.
Your red shirt was dirty and you had to wear the blue one. I can imagine. Now we can kind of relate this to toxic relationships as well, because, you know, you come out of toxic relationships and you've been kind of told there's one way to do things and it's the toxic person's way. You know, they have certain rules that we think is kind of, you know, why do I have to wear my hair like that? I'm a 50-year-old woman. I should be able to, but it's kind of the same. And so I remember coming out of my marriage, I've said this on the podcast before, not being able to order off of a menu, not because he was telling me what to order, but why are you having chicken? Or don't you think that's too expensive? Well, it would be a lot easier if you just tell me what to order, because then I could just order it, but you're not going to do that. You're going to set me up for, you know, okay, I'm 35 years old. I wait to see what you're ordering. I wait to see what the price point is. And then I order something I don't want, hoping I don't get in trouble for ordering it. Mm-hmm. I thought something else this morning. I was talking to a client and I had a lady that I worked with for a while and I didn't realize it at the time, but she was kind of the same. And this is probably how you felt at times during this, but I love cowboy boots. So I wore cowboy boots when I was practicing a lot to the office. And one day I had the cutest little Southwestern kind of Aztec skirt with my cowboy boots. And I was so excited about it because it had a little fringe on the bottom and I just was excited to wear it. And I'll never forget that day. And that skirt still hangs in my closet and I haven't worn it since. Because every time I think, oh, I should wear this, this memory comes up. She came in and she didn't say, oh, that's a cute skirt. Or, oh, I don't really like Southwest. She goes, oh, Southwest print. And then you're like, so the whole day, is this a bad skirt? Is this skirt ugly? Does she like my skirt? What was the nod? What was the... And so then you start thinking, okay, well, we don't want people to think we're wearing ugly clothes. And so I can imagine that it was probably 87 times magnified of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every single thing, because nothing was probably very clear. It was like, oh, you're going to send your kid in the street. Or,
yeah.
Oh, you're gonna wear a blue shirt to the grocery store. And you're just like, because they would just tell you it was easier probably at times when you thought about trying to make your way without people telling you what to do. Sometimes I operated off of a list very well when I was in the relationship with my former. And then when I got out, I didn't have anybody handing me a list, a made up one or an invisible one or anything. And I learned, to this day, write myself a to-do list every morning because I got so used, okay, this and then this and then this. Because otherwise you get the, oh, Southwest. And then you're like, oh my God, I'm going to make the wrong decision.
Yeah, well, and that reminds me of something like when you're coming out of this kind of thing, it's like you get that from those people in the toxic religion. And so you're coming out of their disdain and criticism and all of that. But then when you're associating with people who are not from that, like the more that you modify how you're living and you're going around different people or you're listening to more mainstream people who are not part of that group, then those people see you doing things that are normal to you and they might not give real disdain, but you can just tell, like, whether or not they nicely question, you know, for me, I would have people say, oh, that's interesting. Why do you do that? Or, you know, they're just curious maybe, or you just kind of see the question mark in their eyes sometimes. And it would be like, oh, so I'm getting it from both ways. Like there was a very long period of time where it's like, I'm coming out of it on this one side, but then I don't fit in the normal world because I'm just really warped and changed. You know, I don't know how to be, it felt kind of like being an alien. Like I'm an alien from another planet coming here.
We are that emotionally wired are a little bit subconscious of how we think people feel about us, what people are saying, what people are thinking, which is why you were such a hard rule follower because you didn't want to be in trouble.
Yeah.
When you're in there. So I can imagine how uncomfortable it was coming out of there, knowing you don't owe them an explanation. So you don't have to explain what you're doing, but knowing that they're looking at you like, what is she doing?
Yep.
You had to have amazing courage to just not give up and keep going forward.
I really did. I'll say that. Like, I can't believe that I was strong enough to come out of that and go through all of the anger. I mean, I was really officially shunned. I had seen other people leave my last church and be shunned. And it would look, you know, angry a lot of the time, but also it would look like people being very, very sad and worried. And it's hard to navigate the emotions of someone in the store. You know, you're trying to buy groceries. I still see people from my old church all the time. And, you know, you're picking out your cereal, not praying about what one. And then all of a sudden, some really kind-hearted person who knows that you're going to hell and you're, you know, as the church says, you've been handed over to depravity now and Satan, you're following Satan and the demons. And so they'll say these pitying things and it's like, but they don't mean to be mean. They're actually being kind in their world and it's hard to take that.
Well, and you know, if you look at it from their point of view, which we don't like to do, right? They're still a believer.
Mm-hmm.
They're still in there where the believer, and now as far as they can see, you've fallen.
Yeah.
Even though you feel like you've made a very good step for yourself, they view you as fallen. And there's another one, you can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't understand it.
Yeah.
What do you do now? Cause you just mentioned, you still see people from the church. So how do you go about having your podcast and telling your story and knowing that if the right person hears it, you might hear about it?
Yeah. I had to come through, I mean, it's been a few years now of being shunned and misunderstood. And I think it built up a thick enough skin, and mostly just that idea that's so important in any kind of counseling or recovery work, where you can't change what people think. You can't change their beliefs. You have to go with your beliefs and your values, no matter what anyone thinks. And so I decided to start the podcast, and I thought, I'm just going to make it anonymous. Like, I call it Crooked Little Girl. And so it doesn't have my actual name attached to it. And I don't put out my full name in anything associated with it, just because I feel like I want to honor my family and my old friends, and the ministry leaders. They're doing what they believe and what they think is godly. And even when I left, one thing that I'm still proud of, because my emotional pain was so bad. Like, when I was trying to leave, there was a lot of lies about me from people very close, like that I had grown up very close to. They lied about me, and I would confront them, and they would say things like, well, we have to lie to make everyone afraid of you. You're doing dangerous things, you know? And so anyway, my pain was very high. But at the same time, I decided to leave with integrity, and I journaled and prayed a lot about it for months on how to do it. And what I settled on was, I'm just going to say that God called me elsewhere, and I'm going to leave with a smile on my face, and I'm never going to badmouth around here. Like, even if I see people, I'm not going to badmouth anything about that church or any of the people. But a few months ago,
it's not going to get you anywhere. It's just going to bring that back to your life.
Yeah. And they can't hear it, you know, and I don't want to spread that negative energy, but I did start the podcast just to talk about the system of that kind of toxic religion in general, without naming the old churches I went to. Because I know that there are a lot of people like me who are coming out of it, and they were raised in it. They don't know any other way to live. And I remember the pain and how disorienting it felt to be just paralyzed with fear about normal things, you know, even emotions that we have as humans, just being paralyzed with fear that I'm having this emotion. So I wanted to help and kind of validate that for people if I can, while at the same time never going into that negative place or naming specific people. Yeah.
Well, and that's it, that dumps you into the bitter bucket, and the bitter bucket only hurts you.
Yeah.
You know, I think too, I was talking about the courage that you would have had to have. Anybody who leaves a toxic relationship of any kind, courage has to override your fear. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things, we didn't even talk about this, so I am assuming this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but at that point, you knew that your job was to take care of Charlotte. Mm-hmm. You know, it's your personality that shines through by not wanting revenge and not wanting to expose. That is how I handled leaving my former also. One, anytime you go back bitter, go back for revenge, try to expose, you're still giving them the attention. You're dipping your toe right back into the toxic bucket that you just fought for years to get out of. Yeah. And so I admire that hugely in you. You're not leaving one person. You are leaving a community of people that you had to literally basically know that they were no longer going to be in your life. And some of them were very close to you.
Yeah. And I wasn't allowed to have anyone close outside of our church. You know, that's part of it in these churches. You can't associate closely with anyone else. And so I really left everyone. And I was trying to also get out of my marriage at the same time. And I knew that the cost would be high, but yeah, it became worth it. And it's funny, the hardest thing wasn't the angry people. It was the people who looked afraid of me. Like, when I would go to the store, or if I was taking my kids to the park, sometimes I would randomly run into someone, and instead of coming and chewing me out, sometimes, maybe half of the time, these really nice people that, you know, they had been there, they were the ones I would go to if I had something hard happen to me. They would pray for me and I would pray for them. And just those close, close friends, they would look at me and I would see their eyes register absolute terror when they saw me, and they would just turn and go. you know, that just happened the other day again at the hospital for an appointment. And it just still, it doesn't hit me as hard now, but it's the worst gut punch to be like, yes, they're terrified of me. And I'm such a nice person.
Yeah, you are a nice person. You are like way nice person. I can definitely vouch for that. I think too, they don't know, if I'm understanding this right, they don't know, just like you didn't, how to interact with people that are outside of that community. Mm-hmm. And now you are one of those people outside of the community.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they're afraid that you'll contaminate them. I know that's the teaching. They would say it that way at church. You're contaminated by the demons in people. Maybe, if they're not here.
Maybe you could host little evangelical meetings on the playground and contaminate them.
I should, in my backyard. I should have a little
library evangelism. And put some notes in their books.
I should.
I love that. Sorry, that's cute. So I didn't expect this podcast to go like this. I kind of have a pain in my stomach because the way you explain it and me picturing, you know, what you went through and literally the uprooting everything you knew from the beginning of your time, mm-hmm, and doing what you're doing now, it's very moving to me. And I want to congratulate you on that. If people want to find your podcast, how do they find it?
So it's on all the podcast places, and it's called Crooked Little Girl. And that name, I thought long and hard about a good anonymous catchy name, and it's crooked because I feel like I was handed a crooked gospel, you know, instead of redemption and grace and life, it was abuse and oppression, you know, and, but also things, just in my life, I feel like a lot of things have been crooked and it was like, why doesn't this work? Why doesn't anything line up? Nothing is every realm of my life. It didn't work. And it's like, if you're trying to build something and everything is crooked, it just won't work. And that's what my life was until I finally got out and started this journey of real healing and emancipation. And so that's the name.
I do have to say one other thing. I think it is amazing that you did not ditch religion altogether.
A lot of people say that to me. It's honestly, it's because when I was the most hurt, I mean, there were times that I had real trauma, like not just from my personal life, but also from church, from the religious things. I had to go through therapy to heal from PTSD, specifically about, you know, God sending me to hell if I did certain things, or I don't know, all these, the exorcisms, I had PTSD. But in it, interestingly, I felt guilty about it as a kid and then an adult, but God would come. There were times where I was curled up in a little ball on the floor, weeping or even too afraid to cry in the real traumatic incidents. And a warm presence would come. And later on, I would feel guilty because I would think, well, I don't know, maybe that was a demon or something trying to masquerade as light because God wanted me to be hurt.
Right,
but then I could look back, you know, it's like,
If I was in your situation, I would be questioning all of that too, because that was the basis of your learned education from baby.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know what that warm, kind, stabilizing force was. I didn't think it was God until later when I was coming out. I thought, like, no, that's God. And I actually, part of my healing at the beginning was I joined a 12-step group called Adult Children of Alcoholic and Dysfunctional Families. Mm-hmm. And so like every 12-step group, you have to begin by finding a higher power and asking for that higher power to love you unconditionally, you know, and you go through in that one, instead of making amends for the wrongs that you've done, I think it's the only 12-step where you make amends to yourself for the ways that you let either a dysfunctional family or a dysfunctional church, in my case, you let them control you and abuse you. And you go through all the trauma and it heals your PTSD as you take inventory in different specific mm-hmm. ways, working the 12 steps, seeing how God was there. You know, the God that you believe in now, whatever you call them, you can look back and say, Oh, I see how there was something there. There was a force for my healing, you know.
But you know, when you felt that, you have got my brain just flying. But when you felt that and you felt like there was a warmth, maybe calming peace, and you thought, oh, well, what if that's a demon?
Mm-hmm.
You had not ever been presented with that side of a higher power before. You've been presented with the one that was judgmental and, you know, came down on you if you didn't do everything right. So feeling something that was peaceful would have made you question if that's what that was, because that's not the God that you taught was out there.
Yeah. I was specifically taught that love, any kind of warm, nice feeling love, was a human thing to trap you for Satan, because humans want to be comfortable. We want a warm, fuzzy feeling. And even romance was wrong. Like, if anyone listening grew up with purity culture, I mean, that's what I talk about a lot on my podcast, because that was the linchpin of almost all the abuse, was purity culture. And I won't get into all that now, but yeah, God or anything true was harsh, and it was uncomfortable, and you suffer, and then in heaven, you can feel good.
And anything good you only got through trudging through the harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're amazing. Absolutely amazing. So I'll have your link to the podcast of Crooked Little Girl in the show notes. And thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I really thanks for having me.
Enjoyed this conversation.
Me too. Well, this was great.
I have a feeling we will probably see you back. I am guessing.
Oh, so I would love that.
I would appreciate it. Okay. Until then.
Yeah.